Okay, friends, hi. And this is the 15th rule. It's program number 14. These programs have been quite long now because I'm in a hurry to get this work done before departing to the United States. And this is the very last section as well in the book. So we have another 7 pages here of the document, and another 7 pages of the book itself. So this section is called The New Age Groups and Training. To those who are working on the inner side, the workers in the world fall into 3 groups. Number 1, those few and far between who are true Aquarians, you know, even though we haven't really reached the point of freedom from Pisces and 6-ray energies, these work under real difficulties, for their vision is beyond the grasp of the majority, and they often meet with lack of understanding, frequent disappointment in their fellow workers, and much loneliness. Few and far between, he says. Okay. Do you know any? 2, those who are straight Pisceans. These work with much greater facility and find a more rapid response from those around them. Their work is more doctrinal, less inclusive, and colored by the spirit of separation. We realize that Pisces has a lot to do with obedience. Obedience and to the doctrines accepted. They include the mass of world workers in all the various departments of human thought and welfare. Colored by the spirit of separation. Well, we have to remember that Pisces takes us into the cloister. And then 3, those Pisceans who are enough developed to respond to the Aquarian message, but who as yet cannot trust themselves to employ the real Aquarian methods of work and message. So, you know, how many of us are in there? Maybe quite a few. For instance, they have in the political field a sense of internationalism, but they cannot apply it when it comes to the understanding of others. So, you know, they have theory, but not practice. They think they have a universal consciousness, but when it comes to a test, they discriminate and eliminate. So often we're caught between 2 ways of being. They constitute a much smaller group than the true Pisceans and are doing good work and filling a much needed place. The problem they present, however, to the Aquarian worker lies in the fact that though they respond to the ideal and regard themselves as of the New Age, they are not truly so. Well, we have to assess ourselves very carefully to see where we stand here. They see a bit of the vision and they have grasped the theory, but they cannot express it in action. Well, I'm sure we've caught ourselves in contradictions like this many times. Thus, we have these 3 groups doing much needed work and reaching their united undertakings, through their united undertakings, the mass of people, and fulfilling thus their dharma. One group works necessarily under the glamour of public opinion. Well, this is, what should we say, one of the fears DK discussed. The intermediate group has a most difficult task to perform, for where there is no clear vision, the voice of their chosen environment and the voice of the inner group of world knowers are often in conflict, and they are pulled hither and thither, and they respond first to one and then to the other. So the fourth ray is involved. Excuse me. And the group of those who respond more fully to the incoming Aquarian vibration register the voices of the leaders of the other two groups, but the voice of the guiding masters and the voice of the group of world masters serve to guide them unerringly forward. So the highest group has really dependable advice from the ashram and hierarchy generally. I've sought to explain the above modes and methods of work where the times are hard, and even then, right? Now, this was before World War II, remember that. The times are hard and clarity of thought is needed if the work is to go forward as desired. Even such triple distinctions as exist between the groups are themselves of a separative tincture, and it is yet impossible to preserve any idea of the true synthetic relation. So necessarily there is incompleteness in this presentation. Okay, because the true living synthesis is other and very hard to describe. It is again when the many thousands of separative groups can be grouped into three comprehensive ones, and the mind of the disciple be thus freed from the detailed analysis of the world situation among the workers with the plan, so the mind does not become overburdened. Okay, now we had one test, and it was fear of public opinion, wasn't it? Of what others think and the critique. So first test was fear of public opinion and of critique and of rejection. The general idea of wanting to be liked and to be confirmed by others without exception. It can never really happen. The second great test of the sensitive disciple is the fear of failure. Well, I'm sure we all can relate to that one. Especially since the aim is so high, you know? The ideals are so high. This is based on past experience, for all have failed. On a realization of the immediate need and opportunity, and on an acute appreciation of individual limitation and deficiency. This fear of failure based on three things. All right. Three things listed at first. Past experience, maybe it would be a way to make this a little more. And realization of the immediate need and opportunity, for both are great, and one doesn't want to let down those can be who can be helped, or the teacher, and acute appreciation of individual limitation and deficiency, and where that is not present, perhaps a person is exaggerating his competency. It is the result oftentimes of a response to the lowered spiritual and physical vitality of the race today. Also this. Okay, also that. Lowered spiritual and physical vitality. Well, The two are different, aren't they? Right. And I'll make this a little bigger. Never before has there been a time when fear of failure has more widely haunted the human family. It's a good thing in a way, means that responsibility is being accepted. Another cause of this reaction is to be found in the fact that mankind as a whole, and for the first time in the history of the race, senses the vision and has therefore a truer sense of relative values than ever before. And there, you know, you compare yourself, what you can do, what needs to be done, and can the vision be fulfilled? And, you know, probably not to one's satisfaction. Men know themselves to be divine, and this is becoming increasingly a universal realization, hence the present unrest and revolt from trammeling conditions. It is, however, a serious waste of time for a disciple to ponder upon a failure or to fear failing. This is such sound advice, and you know, so often, if people do not criticize themselves, they certainly, I mean, if they don't criticize others, they certainly criticize themselves and thereby hobble the work they might do. There is no such thing as failure. There can be only loss of time. Now, that's going to be one of those great sentences. That is something that, it's a bit like there is no death, you know. This is a big sentence. There is no such thing as failure. There can only be loss of time. Well, ultimate failure will not exist. All will be brought home to their original essence. That in itself is serious these days of dire world need, but the disciple must inevitably someday make good and retrieve his past failures. Yeah. And, you know, the opportunity is great, and hopefully maybe this incarnation is the one where many past failures are retrieved and one makes good. I need not point out that we learn by failure, for that is well known. You know, it's a guardian. A failure is often a protection against a greater possible failure. I need not point out that we learn, that we learn by failure, for that is well known truth and is known as such by all who are attempting to live as souls. Almost every sentence seems worth highlighting. I had a friend who read some of the Bailey books and underlined everything, absolutely every sentence. I said, "Well, how are you going to discriminate now that you've underlined everything? It's the same as if you hadn't." But anyway, that was his method. I need not point out that we learn by failure, for that is well known and is known as such by all who are attempting to live as souls. Nor need the disciple sorrow over the failures apparent or real of his fellow disciples. I mean, everyone makes good, and, you know, in my way of thinking, we all have the ultimate identity of the absolute, or in an articulated form, absolute infinity. Although, really, who can describe it? Every time you try to think into it, it gets more and more elusive. The sense of time produces glamour and disappointment. So, well, how can we be rid of the sense of time? How can we live in the eternal? and know the self as one, maybe we have to really think about getting rid of the sense of time. After all, we have been what we have been forever, if we really can think of our identity in that way. Identity has no particularity whatsoever. True identity. It's all the same. Forever. And because those are words, and it's so difficult to grasp, but when you do grasp it, some kind of revolution in consciousness begins to occur. The sense of time produces glamour and disappointment, whereas the work goes truly forward, and a lesson learned by failure acts as a safeguard for the future. It's all so important. I'm doing what my friend is doing. I'm underlining everything, you know, or at least highlighting everything. Thus, it leads to rapid growth. The greater the sinner, the greater the saint, you know. Thus, it leads to rapid growth. An honest disciple may be momentarily glamored, but in the long run, nothing can really deter him. What are a few brief years in a comparative cycle of eons? Well, if you have the kind of perspective of Master DK, you can ask that question. We don't have that perspective, but we can attempt to think of a few brief years of a lifetime, of an incarnation, compared to many, many rounds and many long cycles. We can think of those things. What is a second of time? Maybe here's an analogy, right? What is a second of time in the span of man's allotted 70 years? This is a telling analogy. To the individual disciple, they appear most important. To the onlooking soul, they seem as nothing at all. And that onlooking soul is our own perspective as well. It's the perspective of the solar angel, angel of the presence, who has that huge capacity to understand duration. And we as souls, when our consciousness is liberated into the causal body and beyond, we have it too, in lesser degree, so far, than the solar angel. So maybe that's the analogy, right? What is a second of time in the span of man's allotted 70 years? I guess ponder on that, right? That second is gone now. And years may remain for people. It's gone. So certainly the chance of attainment is very much with us. To the individual disciple, they appear, you know, these seconds, these failures, whatever, as most important. To the onlooking soul, they seem as nothing at all. For the world, perhaps, a temporary failure may connote delay in expected help, but that again is brief, and help will come from other sources, for the plan goes unerringly forward. Many are enlisted in the execution of the divine plan, and the vacuums are filled. DK has had a lot of the sixth ray in his makeup. I've told the story, and my friends have told me the story, that he had such zeal that he actually was running to fulfill some task, and he smashed himself into the doorway, and he broke his nose. I don't know. This is that, you know, it's kind of a cult gossip about the personhood of the master, but Master Moria kind of referred to it. He had such zeal, incredible zeal. Maybe that's what it takes, you know. Madame Blavatsky had that, you know, when Master Moria appeared on a horse, horses covered with mud. She pressed herself against the saddle, got all muddy. She was so incredibly devoted to him. You hear little bells. It's just my ongoing contact with the outside world. May I in all earnest offer to you the paradoxical injunction to work with utter earnestness and yet at the same time refuse to work with such earnestness and not to take yourself so earnestly. Well, that's in the beginning of Light on the Path. Kill out ambition, but work as one who is ambitious, and various sins along the way are killed out, but they have some value, and so you kind of preserve the best part of them. Alice Bailey has said, well, be personally impersonal and impersonally personal. It's a balance. It's a paradox. And it requires maybe a sense of humor sometimes. As, you know, taking that little self so seriously. In the larger picture, what does that amount to? Sometimes, you know, the earnest disciple is a sight to behold, not happy, you know. The masters they have joy, you know, and it can trickle down as happiness too. And I suppose now and then they're in a state of bliss, you know. So we have to somehow live in the, according to this paradoxical injunction. We keep doing the best we can, and yet we don't take the little ego so seriously that it has to fulfill everything. You know, and Alice Bailey used to say, sit lightly in the saddle. Otherwise, you just really be bounced about on impact with the saddle. Those who stand on the inner side and study the work of the world aspirants today see an almost pitiful distress of individual deficiency, a sustained and strenuous effort on their part to make themselves what they ought to be, and yet at the same time, and here's the point, a distressing lack of proportion and no sense of humor whatsoever. Oh, I have to laugh at myself as I'm kind of anticipating what's coming ahead here. Well, right, the sense of humor, which usually indicates that there's a sense of proportion, and one knows how much to focus upon the little self. Oftentimes it means too much focus upon the little self. You know, forget the, whatever it says, forget the good self and the bad self, and let only the Christ be seen and heard. The word is not forget, but it means rule out, something like that. And let only the Christ be seen and heard. So self-forgetfulness, right? Harmlessness and right speech, how they do go together, raise 1, 2, and 3. I urge upon you to cultivate both these qualities. You know, what is humility? An adjusted sense of right proportion. Maybe two H's, right? Humility and humor. Do not take yourself so seriously, and you will find that you will realize yourself, release yourself for freer and more potent work. Take the plan seriously and the call to serve, but waste not time in constant self-analysis, as if we could perfect the unperfectable. Personality, well, you know, it's perfectible within reason, but not really perfectible. Perfect means complete, and personality is never complete. When you think of all the personalities there have been and how they have stored various qualities or offered various qualities to the causal body, it's like what Master Moria says, wear away irritation through cosmic perception. Therefore, the immediate goal for all aspiring disciples at this time can be seen to be as follows. 1, an achievement of clarity of thought as to their own personal and immediate problems, and primarily the problem as to their objective in service, and this is done through meditation, but not through constant introspective and gloomy, often gloomy, self-analysis. Number two, the development of sensitivity to the new impulses which are flooding the world at this time. You know, it's, what can you call it, becoming an Aquarian. This is to be brought about by loving all men more, and through love and understanding, contacting them with greater facility. This is such wise advice. Love reveals. I think I've never forgotten that, and we've been told in the song that love has eyes, you know. Not jealous eyes, but eyes to meet the need. The rendering, I guess, maybe this is a 1, 2, 3 also. Rendering of service with complete impersonality, and this is done by eliminating personal ambition and love of power. Now, a little more thought needed here. It doesn't mean to render service in some kind of cold way, aloof, non-responsive, non-humorous, non-happy, you know, it's not that. It's with the big picture always in mind, or enough in mind to make the term microscopic man a reality to us. And then the refusal, number four, the refusal to pay attention to public opinion or to failure. These are the two fears he just went over with us. And we learn to, we learn to negate these two fears. This is done by the application of strict attention to the voice of the soul and by an endeavor to dwell ever in the secret place of the Most High. Okay, so instead of listening to the public, we listen to the soul and live within the locus of the soul. Therefore, this is the immediate goal. Goals and requirements abound, and I wonder if we can keep them all in mind, or if sometimes fulfilling one or two of these very well bring along fulfillment of others, or at least an easier fulfillment of these other requirements. We have merged our first point as to the immediate goal and the steps to be taken to reach it with our second point as to conduct and the factors which must be eliminated. So objectives and eliminations. That's objectives and eliminations. And elimination leads to illumination. Certainly, you know, when we unclog the dirt that adheres to our aura, the lower frequencies, higher frequency supervenes, and more light enters and can reach us, right? It only remains, therefore, to point out the penalties. Is he going to end on that note? The penalties which will overtake the probationary disciple and the trained worker should he give way to the glamour and to the faults inherent in his nature and permit them to hinder his work and come between him and the vision goal. So he calls them penalties, better than punishments, because there seems to be, you know, some kind of entity that wants to do the punishing, where penalty is relating to the law. It might be pointed out that there are three main points of danger in the life of service. Maybe we're going to end here with a cautionary tale. I am not here dealing with the individual training of the disciple, but with his life in service and with the activities in which he is engaged as a worker. Not about training, it's about service, okay? But I'm not here dealing with training, but with the life of service. Okay. And with the activities in which he is engaged as a worker. So this is the practical side. His temperament, equipment of characteristics, physical, emotional, and mental, do have a potent effect on his environment and on the people he seeks to help, and also his family background, his world training, and his speech. Well, let's see. What do we have here? Temperament. Personal characteristics, family background, world training, and speech. All of these are influential. Think of your temperament. Think of your qualities and the personality. Think of what you brought forward from your family background and is somehow part of your upbringing and has become ingrained in you, probably. Think of the training you have received esoterically, let's say, and in other ways. Think of what you say and also what you do. The first point of danger is his physical condition. On this, I cannot enlarge beyond begging all disciples. When he uses that word, he really is tremendously in earnest, you know. Begging all disciples to act with wisdom, to give themselves sufficient sleep, right food, which must vary with each individual, and those surroundings, if possible, which will enable them to work with the greatest facility. These are practical matters, and they enter strongly into the life of discipleship. You can't say, well, I'm a disciple, so I can overlook these physical things. Of course, I had better be talking to myself, you know, and I had better listen. The penalty for the infringing of these suggestions works out in lack of power in service and the growing thraldom of the physical body, or thraldom of the consciousness to the physical body. It just becomes weak and incapacitated. Where the physical body is in poor condition, the disciple has to add the liabilities incident upon the bringing in of force, which he finds himself unable to handle. So, you know, what do we have here? A Vulcan and a strong physical body. And refined. And that refinement process is always going on. These are points of danger. Three main points of danger in the life of service. I'm going to really enlarge that to see it better, so that reading through this, and you know, I think I'll probably be able to give this to you if it will be of help. Of course, I'm saying it a little bit late in the day, but if it will be of help in following the teaching and commentary that goes on in the video. The second point of danger is to be found in the astral illusion in which all humanity lives, and its power to glamour or be glamour, even the experienced workers. So, a word to the wise, huh? I have considered this at length in this treatise, which is, as you know, a treatise on the control of the astral body and the right understanding of its laws. So, this is what we're dealing with. And he says it clearly. I just am recognizing so many of the pithy sentences which have somehow constantly appeared in the Bailey work. Here it is said at the end of the book. This is a treatise on the control of the astral body and a right understanding of its laws. Only mental control plus true spiritual perception, which we'll have to call soul perception or triadal perception, will suffice to pierce the illusory astral miasma and reveal to the man that he is a spiritual entity in incarnation and in touch through his mind with the universal mind. Oh, you know, one just wants to absorb this because it's so powerfully. But, no, thank you. They want to, you know, you want to put, I don't know how I can do that. They want to put a new version of Windows 10 in, and surely enough, it's going to interrupt something important. And I'll come down in the morning and it won't be done. Yeah. So, only mental control and true spiritual perception. That's not the perception of the mind alone, not by any means, no. Okay. It does take us up into soul perception and even beyond, into the spiritual triad, spiritual perception. Okay. Will suffice to pierce, that's the fifth ray word, first ray word, this illusory astral miasma, and which prevents us from realizing that we are a spiritual entity in incarnation and in touch through our mind, somehow tenuously, however tenuously, with the universal mind. The penalty which overtakes the disciple who persistently permits himself to be glamored is obvious. His vision becomes fogged and misty, and he loses the sense of touch, as it is called in the old commentaries. You know, how to handle things, what energy to direct, and how much of it, and out of touch, out of touch. He wanders down the lanes of life and misses that straight highway which leads him to his goal. He is out of touch. The highway and the byway. So instead of the highway, we have all the indirectness and delay of the byway. Okay. So we get lost, and we don't really see where we're going. It's like following the will-o'-the-wisp, you know, the swamp light. It looks like something. You follow it right into the swamp. It's dangerous. It doesn't lead you anywhere. And the third danger, he's going through each of the vehicles, and one that is very prevalent at this time, I would say, especially in DK's work, because it attracts many of the mental types, is that of mental pride and consequent inability to work in group formation, because you know you always know more than your group brothers. I think we can understand how that works. The penalty for this is often a temporary success and an enforced working with a group, which has been devitalized of its best elements and which has in it only those people who feed the personality of the head of the group. I think we've seen this too. You know, those who can think independently are chased away. I had an experience once in that way. I was told that philosophy was not important. And of course, being the philosophical type, not that I was necessarily one of the best or elements in the group, but I was certainly chased away by that statement because I just knew it to be incorrect, and I knew it to be coming out of personal motives. Because of the emphasis upon his own ideas and his own method of working, the disciple finds that his group lacks those factors and those people who would have rounded it out, who would have balanced his endeavor and given to his undertaking those qualities he himself lacks. It's quite obvious, right? If we insist too much, as some politicians do, you know, that they be surrounded only by yes people, they're going to miss the necessary complementary point of view. Now, remember that Lincoln, in his cabinet, chose quite a number of his erstwhile opponents, so he would really get the other point of view. I forget what he called it. There was a special name for it. It was very illustrative of what he was doing. So this in itself is a sufficient punishment and quickly brings the honest disciple to his senses, you know, so learn to tolerate variety and not just seek confirmation of one's own point of view. It's like the divine will. Everybody has a piece of it, you know, and when you don't let you keep people from expressing their little piece of it, you impoverish the whole, and the divine will doesn't come through, which is, you know, another argument for humanitarianism, where we give everybody a chance to really be who they are. A lot of things to work through still, the first number of 100 years in the age of Aquarius are not going to be easy. That's Saturn in Aquarius, right? The ruler of this first decanate, through which everybody enters in a way, even though people who are not disciples are in a sense, or aspirants are in a sense, entering via Venus. You already see that happening. Let a disciple who is intelligent, honest, and basically true so err, and in time he will awaken to the fact that the group he has gathered around him are molded by him, or he is molded by them. They are oft embodiments of himself and repeat him. The law works rapidly in the case of disciples, and these adjustments are speedily made, and disciples see rapidly wherein they have erred. You know, if they're honest and they really want to progress, if they just are in it for their lower ego, then they'll be quite happy to have the yes people around them. I just, you know, hats off to Lincoln in the wisdom he had to not only tolerate opposing points of view, but to really listen to them and see where the value might be. I would like to point out to the student that having with steadfastness gone forward, he will discover that the esoteric linking of the outer schools and the inner school, or rank of knowers of truth, is so close that not one earnest student goes totally unrecognized. This means that the masters have their eyes open. And what does it say of the Christ that all true aspirants are known to him? I wonder if I'm saying that correctly, true aspirants, because a true aspirant has taken the first initiation, and at least in the modern day, the Christ is the initiator, and therefore the aspirant will be known to him by whatever means this occurs. In the press of work and in the burden and toil of the day's labors, it is an encouragement to know that there are those who watch and that every loving deed, every aspiring thought, every unselfish reaction is noted and known. Everyone. Amazing. It is amazing that all of these are recorded in a way. Recorded. Bear in mind, however, that it comes to the recognition of the helpers through the increased vibration of the aspirant and not through a specific knowledge of the deeds accomplished. Okay, friends, I think we were at that point where every loving deed, every aspiring thought, every unselfish action is noted by the master, perhaps, or the recorders, the recording angel. It's noted in the Akashic record. Yes. Okay. Everything is attended to in the press of the work and in the burden and toil of the day's labors. It is an encouragement to know that there are those who watch, and that every loving deed, every aspiring thought, every unselfish reaction is noted and known. Every. So as we know, Master DK is not one to exaggerate. Okay. All is known. Bear in mind, however, that it comes to the recognition of the helpers through the increased vibration, that's it, of the aspirant and not through specific knowledge of the deed accomplished or the thought sent out. The evidence is there. The results are there. And this evidence is noted, and then what has caused it is understood. Those who teach are occupied with principles of truth, with vibratory rates, and with the quality of the light to be seen. It's like, let there be no recollection, and yet let memory rule. Recollection is of the details of the circumstance, and memory is the result of those recollections and the progress made. It's built into you. So, you know, the law of economy operates, and DK sometimes explains how it is that the masters read a book that an aspirant has written. They just see a symbol, you know. And the symbol gives to them in a synthetic manner the content of the book. They don't have to read every word. So there is the ability as an initiate to accomplish much more in time because of the synthesizing methods used. The masters, they are not aware of, nor have they the time to consider specific deeds, words, and conditions. Although it's interesting, you know, Master DK hinted at those things when he wrote to his students. He pretty well knew the specifics of his group and occasionally would refer to them. And the sooner students grasp this and put out of their minds any hope of contacting a phenomenal individual whom they call a master, with so much leisure, of such developed powers that he can occupy himself with their trivial affairs in time and space, the more rapidly will they progress. I mean, he has a dry humor, does he not? Okay. This is how the masters work. In the summation of the many deeds and separated instances, they see the result. They see the result. Okay. Where, however, there is steady growth and application to occult principles so that definite changes are produced in the bodies used, that's what they notice, and an increasing radiatory light it is known and recorded, and the aspirant is rewarded by increased opportunity to serve his fellow men. I'm recalling this man who was much afflicted by glamour, and DK referred him to the idea of the symbol of a window in his darkened room, this window being a light, allowing him to see out and allowing light to come in. And sometimes the window was all fogged up and dirty, and sometimes the window was a bit clearer. It's a summation of all that the individual had done, and it shows itself in certain conditions, which are the results. They do not reward by commendation, by patting on the head, or by expressing their pleasure in words. Not very often. I mean, really. I'm recalling that when DK was working with Alice Bailey's secretary called RVB, he said, well, he opened by saying, look, you have made more progress than either your soul or I imagined you would. Is that a commendation or is that a statement of fact? It was simply a condition noted at the very beginning of their instruction together. DK found, you know, that, well, at least he says so, that he had certain things in mind when dealing straightly with his group. But on the other hand, sometimes he just couldn't. Not that he wouldn't have, but the sensitivities of the modern disciple, or maybe we should call it the thin skin, prevented him from doing that, and Alice Bailey would caution him, I guess, against being too straight, although sometimes he really was. But it's amazing how he always couched what he said in love, and how he did say tough things, but in a way in which the love was so evident that under normal circumstances it would be received. They do not reward by commendation or patting on the head, etc. They are occupied in making knowers and masters out of everyday men and women. Think about that task. All of us are a long way from becoming a master, and yet this is the task of our teacher, that he makes of us somehow, stages circumstances, so we can actually become as he is. Well, how does he do this? Okay, and we can follow the guidance indicated here, teaching them to know themselves. You know thyself and thou shalt know the world. The Oracle of Delphi is speaking. I've been sometimes amazed, you know, in dealing with some of the newer students, or those who are almost students, that really the self-examination is hardly existent. How, you know, so self-observation is hardly existent. It's just identified with their solar plexus, and they can't stand back. Okay, but I'm sure we were all like that at some point. Number two, setting them free from authority by awakening interest and inquiry in their minds, and then indicating, no more than that, the direction in which the answer should be sought. Well, okay, what do we have here? Teaching them to know themselves, setting them free from authority by awakening interest and inquiry in their minds, indicating, well, you know, I don't know if a first-ray master would say that, you know. I'm recalling something Master Moria said, you know, when I say run, run, when I say jump, jump, when I say come, come, when I say go, go, you know, it's like that. Of course, I don't know how those instructions were written down. I think they were actually written down by Nicholas Rorick at that time. My impression is, but I'm not sure. And the, you know, Daniel Enten, the head of the society there from whom I could learn that, he's passed on now, lived to a ripe old age and did a wonderful job holding things together. It's curious, you know, we talk sometimes about Master KH and his relationship to Master M, and he said, well, I've always thought that I was most related to KH. And this is so interesting because, you know, he's the head of a first-ray group. And yet many first-ray types were borrowed into the second-ray group of Alice Bailey, namely Foster Bailey, Mary Bailey, you know. It's some part of the balancing act, you know, I think. Anyway, these rays have to come together, the first and the second rays. And then number three, giving them those conditions that will force them to stand on their own two feet and rely on their own souls and not any human being. Rely upon yourself, said the Buddha. Well, self is everything, of course, but rely upon yourself. Not on any human being, be he a beloved friend, teacher, or a master of the wisdom. Self-reliance. So teaching them, what can we say? Can I get rid of that? No. Self-knowledge. Okay. Freedom from external authority. And self-reliance. These sound like the platitudes of the path, but without them, we don't go very far. I seek not to repeat myself, he says. Most of the points that concern the work of the aspirant today I have considered earlier in this treatise. It remains now for all of you to study it with care. Well, you know, do we have time in this day and age? So occupied are we by trivial and secondary things to really study the treasures. It remains now for all of you to study it with care. I close with an appeal to all who read these instructions to rally their forces, to renew their vows of dedication to the service of humanity, to subordinate their own ideas and wishes to the group good, to take their eyes off themselves and fix them anew upon the vision, to guard their tongues from idle speech and criticism, from gossip and innuendo, and to read and study so that the work may go intelligently forward. The Tibetan is really capable of the inspiring exhortation. He'll do that. He'll often present a great deal of material, and then he'll basically try to arouse the enthusiasm of the individual, basically saying, do it, you know, do it. Let all students make up their minds in this day of emergency and of rapid unfolding opportunity to sacrifice all they have to the helping of humanity. To those who give all is given. It's a statement that really rings in my ears, I'll tell you. And also the difficulty of it, to give all, as the Christ has given all, and as the Master has given all. Now is the need and the demand. Now. This is before the Second World War. The urgency of the hour is upon us, and I call upon all of you whom I am seeking to help to join the strenuous effort of the great ones. They are working day and night in an effort to relieve humanity and to offset those evils and disasters which are imminent in the present situation. What do you say? The continuation of the Great War. Those were the evils imminent, and well, this was at the time when Madame Rorick, under the guidance of Master M, was writing about obsession, the epidemic of obsession, and we can see how a whole nation can become obsessed when we look at Germany. What did he say? The negative, sensitive German people with their Pisces personality, you know, somehow easily swayed, easily obsessed. We're looking back now, 85 years or whatever, something like that. They're working night and day. Well, I guess they don't sleep, you know. There's not that necessity. The body is not a drag upon them. And lowering, you know, needing to be tended to be recharged through sleep. I offer to you opportunity, and I tell you that you are needed. What better exhortation than that? I tell you, you are needed, even the very least of you. I assure you that that groups of students working in unison and with deep and unfaltering love for each other can achieve significant results. How can we forget such an exhortation as this? You say, well, that was a long time ago and the war came and went, and well, no, that's now too. The danger is critical because of another attack by the Black Lodge. Selfishness results. And then the prayer, that each of you may so work, and that each of you may lose sight of self, lower self, in the realization of world need, is the earnest prayer and deepest aspiration of your brother, the Tibetan. Well, it's moving. It's moving. And you'd say, how can I resist this? How can I not respond to this exhortation? And there's nothing here. This is my mistake. That's it. At the end. I don't remember when I started it. It took me a long time to do Reizen, the initiations in Cosmic Fire, because I was at first writing everything. And maybe, you know, that's for exactitude of thought. Maybe that's the best way for conversational discussion or, you know, teaching, spontaneity and all that. Maybe this way of using video commentaries is good. Well, you know, it's a wonderful book, and I hope that you have really benefited from your work in it. I mean, if we were to read it again and again, it wouldn't be enough. We have to start studying topically. I've done a little bit of that with the initiations, the first, second, and third initiation, the topical study. And somehow it allows us to bring a lot of information together all under the eye at the same time. And Master DK does really recommend it. But it's also needed to read the book in the horizontal manner and with as much depth as may be possible. So however this shows up, and whether we have the strength to really get into this book and the other books, that's up to each one of us, and also up to the groups with whom we may be working. So I hope this is useful. There's been, maybe 123 or so programs here, something like that, of varying lengths, some, a few of them shorter, quite a few longer. I hope they help you. I hope they help you. I hope they help you. Say everything three times. Think it three times to make that impression. Now, I'll have to see what I do next here, either some compilations or maybe letters on occult meditation. I'm already doing on the glamour programs, Dissipation of Glamour, reading through the book, so that will be available, but along with back and forth in discussion. This is in a more condensed manner. But, you know, that will be available to you, as doing the reappearance of the Christ in that way. It may take a while. Cosmic Fire is finished? What? Cosmic Fire is. Esoteric Astrology is completed. in the way that I can do it. The psychology books, I have selected a lot of material from the old commentary and from certain sections, but I haven't really done them yet, and yet, strangely, the emphasis of the Seven Ray Institute is certainly on esoteric psychology, so I have to see about the benefit of working with them in this way. Probably the one book I won't do, because I just have to be humble about it and realize what I can and can't do, would be esoteric healing. I mean, I could approach it from an academic point of view, and there's a lot of connections, you know. I'm not an esoteric healer per se, although all of us do grow in our ability to transmit or emit, maybe we should say. It's a more unconscious thing. It's just what comes from us. Useful, healing, restorative energies. I'll see about that one. So I'll have to go over the list, you know, and see what it would be best to do. Certainly the compilations offer tremendous opportunity. And really, you know, compilations on Shambhala, you know, Zachary Rymel has prepared wonderful compilations. And many other people have worked on them too, you know. And if one were to tackle this 700 references on Shambhala, that would be important. I'll just have to check and see, you know, given the time allocated, what is best to do. Meanwhile, I'm wishing you success in your studies. Remember that if the work is to go forward intelligently, there must be study. That's what he basically is telling us. The meditation is another matter, but there's quite a bit written on Makara, taken from Dina 2, you know, and maybe I've done commentaries on the first part of Dina 1. I forget all the commentaries. A lot of them are written and prepared for schoolwork. So I've had different modalities in which I've worked, but for right now, it's going to be the modality of speech and video. I can see, I don't know about the convenience for you in accessing these, and maybe it's okay. And I've had some help with the deep students of the wisdom who are helping me transcribe. I'm not helping, I mean, they are transcribing the work, and pretty soon my book on the Egoic Lotus, it's a video book, I think, with lots of information petal by petal for the Egoic Lotus, that will be transcribed. It's already existing as a video commentary. We have to see what use we can make of these things. And I think what I would do, you know, maybe it's a little bit too much, but let's just see, you know, a little bit. Since I'm done with the print, I can enlarge the image a bit, talk directly to you. You just get the sense of a tremendous ashramic effort operating to train disciples. Remember, Master DK's ashram is all about training aspirants to initiation, certainly the first two initiations, and then later, he said, also even the third initiation, although maybe the emphasis is on the first two initiations, training aspirants for initiation. So this kind of material really contributes to training. I mean, where else will we get it? And in consultation with ourselves as a soul and with the angel of the presence, solar angel, the words of the master, our own reading and meditation, and consulting with ourselves as a soul, this is all part of the training. Meditation, study, and service, none of these three can be ignored, and they have to be, I'd say, fairly balanced. Fairly balanced in the life. So there's a lot more to do, a lot more to think about. You know, get into study groups, folks. Probably many of you are, but in the interplay of the group mind, more light will probably emerge, and be steady about it as much as may be possible, whether it's once a week, once every 2 weeks, once every month, whatever. At least once every month, follow the possibilities offered by study groups. And like I say, you know, you're most welcome to use the compilations written. I know a group that's doing that right now, I think on Cosmic Fire, and the video commentaries. And if you use the video commentaries in a group, just, you know, if an interesting point comes up or something you want to discuss, stop it. Stop the rolling of the tape, as it were, even though it's not tape. Stop the program and discuss. And it doesn't make any difference how long it takes. It may take a long time. It's taken me a long time just talking to myself and talking to you, of course. But, you know, as I say, one person here alone talking to himself, it's taken a long time to get some of these books out to you. But don't let time get in the way. The timeless state does exist, and when there is the sense of being, the timeless state will supervene. There is a peace that passeth understanding. It abides in the hearts of those who live in the eternal. There is a power which maketh all things new. It lives and moves in those who know the self as one. So we have to learn how to live in the eternal and know the self as one, and not be badgered by the time sense, which can be such an onerous burden. We're all of us little infinitesimals. I mean, I actually mean that with mathematical clarity as much as I can muster. There's not a definite thing in the world that's not an absolute infinitesimal. And there is no size to these things except they are ever lessenings when compared with any definite quantity, no matter how small. Whether the laws of a particular universe will allow what can be conceived is another matter. Because the deity, the universal logos, will decide limits. Otherwise, you will have infinite universes, and if they're cyclic, that presents a problem, because we don't have an infinity of time to expend on any one universe, nor on the duration between universes. But then there are so many mysteries, because in a way, we can talk about a sequence of universes, but maybe that's an illusion too. And maybe everything is just within the absolute deity happening simultaneously, whatever can happen. There's just so many mysteries that the mind of the human being just has to throw up its hands, you know. I think Galileo ran into that when he drew a circle and imagined that that there were all these radii infinitely close to each other, you know, an infinite number of radii. But then he expanded his circle, and then suddenly the radii in a larger circle had spaces between them, upon which he said, God cannot be comprehended. And here was a man who really had the brain to do a lot of comprehending. So I will let go then of this particular effort and decide what the next one should be, and try to keep them coming to you and informed. We have at the moment on YouTube a lot of these programs, and always on Makara, we post these programs, different ways of, you know, accessing them. There's probably more than any one of us can assimilate. And certainly the Tibetan has given us more and said so than we can possibly assimilate. Add to it, you know, these commentaries and so forth, but they're meant to be tools for your study, meditation study, and service. So I just hope that you are benefited, and that we can all pursue the meditation study and service. Don't forget the Moria Federation. It comes close, I think, to offering a program that is somewhat akin to the preparatory schools for the new esoteric schools of meditation. Well, I can't include everything, of course, but I think it's a good training program. And this is not to say that the Arcane School isn't, or the School of Esoteric Studies and so forth. They're all good training programs. But how much we get out of the Tibetans' teaching is very much up to us. And in a way, no one can teach you anything. You have to teach yourself. And it has to be realized by yourself if it's really going to stick. So I don't know what the famous last words might be. I think the famous last words are the following. Okay. Can you intuit what I'm going to do here? Bet you can. Okay. I'll make this smaller now. And we'll end this way, with this great mantra and word of power, the great invocation. And we'll use a second ray note when we sound the sacred word. Let's go back to the right proportion. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, that's it for this one. Lots of love and many blessings. And we'll see you next time with something new. I'm not sure what, but we'll see what is needed. Okay, take care. Study hard. Meditate deeply. Serve well, you know. Om.